Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, October 18th. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Arcata's Egghead restaurant owner pleads guilty to multiple child sexual assault charges. Elon Musk sues Coastal Commission, including Humboldt supervisor. And 500 Mendocino cultivators now have a pathway to state licensure. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. The Mateel Community Center is celebrating its 45th anniversary this Saturday in Redway, highlighting the iconic moments the beloved hall has brought to Southern Humboldt. They invite all who have cherished the Mateel over the decades to join them for an evening of celebration and unity.
Hello, KMUD family and listeners at large. This is Aaron Snodgrass. I work for the Mateel part-time doing event production, and I have a history with the Mateel. I've been on the board twice and holds a special place in my heart, and excited to be able to help present this event coming up tomorrow.
Like KMUD, the original home of the Mateel was in Garberville before moving to Redway.
They formed the community center. They filed articles of incorporation, and actually the date is spot on, October 19th, 1979. And I believe it was born out of a place, you know, to gather and to create community where people could come together. Back then, they were able to raise enough money to buy the Fireman's Hall in Garberville that unfortunately, sadly, was burned down by an arson, which led to the birth of Reggae on the River as a fundraiser to rebuild the hall. And thanks to a generous donation of Harold Marish, that used to own the market, the land was donated and eventually the hall was rebuilt in Redway.
The hall's name was created to represent the watershed its community was a part of.
Yes, that's correct. Many people actually don't know that, but there was a poem by Jim Deerhawk, who was a dear member of this community for a long time. And that poem actually is in the office, but it comes from the Mateel and the eel. And if you put those two words together, you get the Mateel.
Sticking to the true grit nature of Southern Humboldt, the Mateel was quite literally built by the hands of the community.
Oh, absolutely. I remember being a teenager and the call to arms, to come help to build the community. Action. Thank you. To action. But use your arms in that action. Swing hammers, etc. And they did it. You know, they built that amazing, beautiful hall.
The Mateel has been used for weddings, memorials, and other community celebrations. It has also hosted concerts featuring iconic names like John Trudell, the Marley Family, Black Flag, and even the Red Hot Chili Peppers, prior to the band's worldwide fame.
That was 1989. That was an iconic night for sure. They were just blowing up, and we had some young women in the community that were interested in getting started in event production, and they put that show on, Chrissy and Celeste. And that was, you know, just another iconic thing that happened at the Mateel. People still talk about what we're talking about right now.
Toots Hibbert of Toots and the Mitals, who passed away in 2020, was considered a reggae pioneer on par with Bob Marley. And one of his final shows took place at the Mateel.
Yes, at least in this area. I don't know if it was his very final show, but he did pass away the very next year, and that was Reggae Legacy 2019.
Snodgrass says the Mateel has always been about bringing people together, and he hopes that legacy continues tomorrow for the 45th anniversary celebration, featuring live music, libations, and more.
That's the plan. That's the hope. That's, you know, we're just keeping the dream alive here, and we got a really great night lined up, and everybody's invited. Mateel members are half off, only $10 to get in the door. And we're going to, thanks to Babette, we're going to have free cake. And there's going to be incredible music. There's also going to be a memorabilia wall. So if you have anything you want to bring and tack up and share for the evening, please bring it, whether it's a photograph, a ticket stub, a poster, a T-shirt. Please come and share it. starts at 6 p.m. It's going to run until midnight, and we've got a whole bunch of good food that's going to be cooked up in the Mateel kitchen. There'll be beer and wine for people that are 21 and up, and it's going to have some incredible music out of the Bay Area, primarily. Alyssa Rockus are Grammy nominated, and they rap and perform reggaeton and hip hop in Spanish and English. So that's going to be really awesome. And also we have Epicenter Sound, which is a group of DJs out of Bolinas. And then a homegrown favorite, G Davis, is going to be there.
The path to 45 years hasn't been without its challenges. But Snodgrass hopes to see the Mateel thrive in prosperity for another 45 years to come.
This was a counterculture place, and it still is, and it was a place where people came together with the grassroots and made stuff happen. Yeah, it's hard to believe, and here we are keeping the legacy alive.
You can learn more about the October 19th 45-year anniversary celebration at mateel.org. The following story contains sensitive content related to sexual assault and child abuse, which may be distressing for some of our listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Arcata restaurant owner Kevin Dykes has pleaded guilty to multiple counts of sexual assault involving minors, bringing a lengthy legal battle to a resolution. Dykes, initially arrested in 2021 in Arcata, accepted a plea agreement that will see him serve a 21-year prison sentence. He will also be required to register as a lifelong sex offender and has waived his right to appeal the decision. Formal sentencing is set for November 13th, when Judge Stewart is expected to finalize the terms. The case against Dykes has spanned over 3 years, involving extensive investigation work by local law enforcement, prosecutors, and victim advocacy groups. The charges to which Dykes pleaded guilty include kidnapping and multiple counts of lewd acts with children under 14. The crimes involved two victims, identified in court documents as John Doe 1 and John Doe 2. Dykes faced several delays in the trial process, but with the plea agreement, his victims will be spared the trauma of a full jury trial. The legal proceedings saw some charges modified as part of the plea deal. One of the original charges, which pertained to kidnapping with the intent to commit serious offenses such as robbery or sexual assault, and carries a potential life sentence, was reduced. District Attorney Whitney Tim confirmed that the plea agreement mandates a 21-year prison term, lifetime sex offender registration, and a 20-year parole period following Dykes' release from custody. As per California state law, Dykes will be subjected to, quote, sexually violent predator screening, which could further impact his conditions of release and monitoring. His name will also be added to Megan's Law website, which lists registered sex offenders. The mother of John Doe 1 expressed relief that the plea deal spared her son from having to testify in court. She shared the emotional toll the case has taken on their family, recounting how her child had to undergo therapy and prepare for court appearances over the past 3 years. She condemned Dykes' defense team for attempting to isolate her son during pretrial proceedings, stating that such efforts added to their family's distress. In her statement, the mother emphasized the long-term impact of the crimes on the victims and their families. She urged other parents to educate their children about boundaries and inappropriate behavior, and to foster open communication. She noted that many child sexual abuse cases involve someone the child knows, often a trusted individual, which was the case here. The victim's family hopes that Dykes' incarceration will prevent him from harming other children. John Doe 1, now 13 years of age, also provided a statement encouraging other young survivors to come forward and hold their abusers accountable. He expressed his determination to speak out and help bring Dykes to justice. According to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, 1 in 5 girls and 1 in 20 boys experience sexual abuse before the age of 18. These statistics highlight the importance of community awareness, education, and preventative measures to protect children. The district attorney's office advises families to seek support from trusted organizations to navigate the challenges posed by such incidents. District Attorney Stacey Eads has indicated that the formal statement on the case will be released following the November 13th sentencing hearing. KMA News would like to extend a special thanks to Kim Kemp and Ryan Hudson of the Red-Headed Black Belt online news source for their original reporting, of which we relied on for this report. Comments made by Humboldt County's representative to the California Coastal Commission are part of the basis of a lawsuit from the world's richest man, KMUD's Daniel Mintz reports.
Elon Musk is suing the California Coastal Commission for bias, citing comments from Humboldt County's representative and other commissioners who described the infamous billionaire as a hateful shyster. The nexus between politics and regulation figured into the commission's consideration of expanding rocket launches by SpaceX, Musk's satellite communications corporation. Increasing SpaceX launches at the Vandenberg Space Force Base in Southern California was up for a Coastal Act consistency determination at the October 10th commission meeting. SpaceX got a conditional commission sign-off for 36 rocket launches last August. An increase to 50 launches was on the table, and commission staff said a further increase to 100 launches is planned for 2025. Commission staff recommended approving a consistency finding due to a number of conditions, including measures to minimize sonic booms and other effects on wildlife, biological monitoring, and formation of a working group to evaluate impacts. The project applicant is the U.S. Air Force's Space Force Agency, but Musk's role loomed large. Commissioner Mike Wilson, a Humboldt County supervisor, described Musk's politicking as destructive.
This company is owned by the richest person in the world with direct control over what could be the most extensive global communication system on the planet. And just last week, that person was speaking about political retribution on a national stage, and it was very glib, but yet he was standing next to a person, a candidate that openly promotes and is working to normalize that language, right? And the reason I bring that up is because everyone feels that, and so I just want to make sure that we don't normalize that, and that I'm hoping that it even makes me nervous bringing it up, because I feel like I'm promoting it myself by bringing it up. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying not to. What I'm trying to say is, like, we can't hide from that, and we have to push back against that. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about the promotion of this technology and a human being that has so much power over that.
A majority of commissioners voted against approving a consistency finding. Despite his comments, Wilson was among the minority of commissioners who voted for it, saying it will keep the commission involved in federal-state agency partnerships. But his vote didn't spare him from Musk's condemnation. Days after the commission meeting, Musk filed a lawsuit challenging the decision, saying the commission is, quote, shamelessly breaking the law, and posted a compilation video of comments from the meeting, including Wilson's comments. Commissioner Gretchen Newsom said SpaceX harasses its employees and has a poor safety record, and she scolded Musk's behavior.
Elon Musk has enjoyed substantial subsidies from California, amounting to over $3.2 billion, while threatening to relocate his operations, including his headquarters, from California to Texas, citing his bigoted beliefs against California's safeguards and protections of our transgender community. This behavior raises concerns about the motivations behind his request for government support. And here today, we have the U.S. Department of the Air Force and U.S. Space Force presenting permitting requests on behalf of SpaceX to the profitable benefit of SpaceX and its billionaire CEO. Right now, Elon Musk is hopping about the country, spewing and tweeting political falsehoods and attacking FEMA while claiming his desire to help the hurricane victims with free Starlink access to the internet. But this claim in itself is to the public benefit is a falsehood, because one must first purchase the Starlink startup kit for several hundred dollars and then face a monthly fee of $120 after 30 days of free internet, a sick ploy to gain customers that are facing tremendous burden and dire straits. They're hurricane victims.
A public comment period included representatives of environmental groups who urged the commission to reject the launch increase. But Commissioner Susan Loewenberg noted the agreed-upon conditions and said the commission should be involved in their implementation.
I don't want us to lose a seat at the table. And that's what I'm hearing from staff. If we don't go forward here, and we would lose our seat at the table. And that concerns me. And I do appreciate the fact that we asked for six conditions, and the two gentlemen sitting right here made that happen. And I appreciate that very much. But really, at the end of the day, I don't want us to lose our seat at the table. So I am actually going to vote to concur so that we do keep that seat at the table.
The commission voted 6-4 against the project. Among the dissenters was commission's chair, Carol Hart, who said there's a lack of information on potential impacts of sonic booms and coastal debris. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Turning to Mendocino, the Department of Cannabis Control has certified an environmental impact report for the county. The Department of Cannabis Control, DCC, has taken a significant step by certifying an EIR in Mendocino County, addressing a long-standing barrier for more than 500 cannabis cultivators with provisional licenses. This certification allows cultivators, many of whom have deep roots in the county's cannabis history, to transition from provisional to annual licenses, providing long-awaited relief for the local industry. For Mendocino cultivators, navigating the legal requirements for compliant cannabis farming has been challenging, with many describing the process as confusing and full of conundrums. One of the major hurdles has been compliance with the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, and other land use regulations, which have cast uncertainty on the future of cannabis cultivation in the region. Here is a clip from a 2021 KMUD interview with Mendocino County Supervisor Ted Williams and a local cannabis farmer, Blair O'Claire, a Sun and Earth certified regenerative farmer, both discussing their struggles with CEQA compliance.
In other counties, the local permitting process generates documentation that can be passed on to the state to show that site-specific review has been completed. In the case of Mendocino County, we don't have that documentation because our ordinance, our permitting process, didn't generate what CDFA views as adequate site-specific review.
Supervisor Williams stated that as it stands, cultivators do not have a clear path to obtain a state license.
Those cultivators can work directly with the state, submitting their full CEQA to CDFA. There are some difficulties with that path. One is it's rather expensive for the cultivator to do full CEQA review.
The cost of a CEQA review can range from a few thousand dollars to a few hundred thousand dollars.
And then another is CDFA isn't staffed up to process in any timely manner. We don't know exactly how long it would take, somewhere between months and years. And we're not certain that cultivators would be able to continue on provisionals. For one, the state legislature has not extended provisionals yet, and so they are set to expire. And then second, we don't know if the cultivator would be an in-progress status through the eyes of the state sufficient to maintain a provisional.
Approximately 1,100 Mendocino cultivators have attempted to enter the legal cannabis market through the county permitting process. Of those, only 275 were issued county permits. KMUD News asked how many cultivators have currently obtained an annual state license.
Very few, but I would say about 99% of the legal market in Mendocino County is operating on provisional licenses.
KMUD News also spoke with a local cultivator who comments on Supervisor Williams' suggestions.
Becoming legal has been an endless roller coaster. It's really hard to navigate.
Like many farms trying to become legal in Mendocino County, Radical Herbs has their provisional state license, but not their annual, which will expire unless a CEQA review is conducted.
We don't have an annual state license, and a big part of that has to do with the issues with CEQA, which are very complicated. And I've been following it closely, but at the same time, I don't know what the right answer or the right path is going forward.
Since legalization, Mendocino officials have been searching for solutions. And yesterday's announcement from Sacramento marks a breakthrough in those efforts. DCC Director Nicole Elliott stated, quote, "Our goal has always been clear, to support those who helped build California's cannabis industry through a licensing program that is environmentally conscious and legally sound. With the EIR certified, we're one step closer to keeping Mendocino's pioneering cannabis spirit alive," close quote. Chair of the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors, Mo Mulhern, applauded the DCC, stating that they have eliminated the final roadblock for local cultivators. The DCC says it will continue reviewing individual annual license applications and is preparing to support cultivators through the ongoing transition. The first license conversions are expected to begin later this month. KEMA News will be following up with the DCC next week and will provide a more in-depth report for our listeners. The friends and family of Roy Satoki are still asking for answers regarding their missing loved one, who has been unaccounted for nearly a month. He was last seen on September 23rd in McKinleyville.
My name is Atira. I'm Pitt River, Medici. I've been friends with Roy since the sixth grade. He's been living on and off with me since about May of this year. He's definitely one of my best friends and is a very important and special person to me. And I'm worried every day. I think we all are very worried every day that goes on that he's not here.
According to cell phone data tracked by law enforcement, Satoki's last cellular pings were in the Willow Creek, Hoopa area, which is where tomorrow's search efforts will be focused.
There's going to be a search tomorrow, Saturday, October 19th at 9 a.m. We're going to meet up at the Bigfoot Museum parking lot in Willow Creek, California. We ask that people wear reflective gear and or brightly colored clothing, and boots are recommended. Bring snacks, water. We're going to have some limited lunch. We have also set up a GoFundMe for anybody that would like to or is in the financial position to donate to help the family afford additional resources. Please visit the Finding Roy Satoki Facebook group and view the featured post for the link to donate and follow for any current updates.
Satoki is native, and his loved ones worry that he may have fallen victim to the MMIP, Missing and Murdered Indigenous People crisis.
Oh, definitely. This is most certainly falling in that exact line. It feels as if we haven't been getting as much help as we need, and it's been taking us doing a lot of our own investigating, and I'm sure the police are probably doing what they can, but it really doesn't feel like much.
The California statewide Feather Alert program was introduced through Assembly Bill 1314 and became law in 2021. It serves as a resource to law enforcement agencies investigating the suspicious or unexplainable disappearance of an Indigenous person. The alert provides immediate information to the public to aid in the swift recovery of missing Indigenous individuals. However, loved ones say law enforcement did not immediately initiate the alert.
I didn't even know. I was the person that filed the report, the missing persons report, and I didn't know, you know, that they haven't really been keeping us in touch. It definitely feels like it's each day that goes on, it's scarily falling into that statistic.
Anyone with information is asked to contact the Arcata Police Department at 707-825-2587. Extension 1, reaches their anonymous crime tip line.
If you have any information, please just let us or somebody know. Come forward.
There will be a foot search tomorrow, Saturday, October 19th, starting at 9 a.m. The group will be meeting at the Bigfoot Museum parking lot in Willow Creek. Reflective gear and bright-colored clothing are required. Boots are recommended. For questions about the search, you can call or text 707-845-0509.
We just need help looking. We need help looking, and that we will not stop looking until Roy is found.
Roy Satoki is described as a 26-year-old Native American man with black hair and brown eyes. You can see a photo of Satoki on the KMUD News Facebook page. In national news, presidential campaigns hold rallies in Wisconsin, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania as early voting begins in some states. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
With just 19 days before Election Day, some people are already casting their votes, like a record 600,000 early voters in Georgia, including former President Jimmy Carter, and also in North Carolina.
Now today's the day, North Carolina. Early voting starts today. And I am proud to have voted. I voted today, as you all should vote today.
Devin Freeman is a university senior who introduced the Democratic candidate for vice president at a rally on the first day of early voting. Presidential candidate Kamala Harris was on the trail in Wisconsin with three campaign stops. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump was scheduled to speak at a charity dinner in the evening, and his running mate, Ohio Governor J.D. Vance, spoke at a rally in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
19 days until we get to say to Kamala Harris and her broken leadership, you are fired. Go back to San Francisco, where you belong.
Vance had praise for Donald Trump, blame for Kamala Harris, and some proposed solutions for the problems of the day, such as the high cost of groceries.
And we all know, my friends, this is not rocket science. If you want to lower prices on American families, the most important thing that we need to do is unleash Pennsylvania energy workers. Drill, baby, drill. That'll lower prices for all of us.
He also offered the Trump-Vance solution to the shortage of affordable housing.
If you build 5 million new homes over the next 3 years, but you import 25 million illegal aliens, the price of housing is going to go up. Because when American homes don't go to American citizens, that is one of the biggest drivers of the increase in housing costs. So here's the simple Donald Trump plan to reduce housing costs for American citizens. Build more American homes, but make sure they go to American citizens, not people who don't have the legal right to be here.
And also a solution to saving Social Security and Medicare.
So while Kamala Harris wants to roll out the red carpet for illegal aliens and give them Medicare and Social Security, the message of Donald J. Trump to people who are in this country illegally is simple. Pack your bags, because in 4 months you're going back home.
And also health care.
I feel terrible for anybody who's got to take their kid to the emergency room, because you're going to wait longer than 3 hours because there are millions of people in the United States of America who don't have the legal right to be here.
Back in North Carolina, vice presidential candidate Tim Walz spoke at a rally in Durham, North Carolina, where he drew a contrast between the Harris-Walz ticket and the Trump-Vance ticket.
This might be the first time that both Democrats on the ticket are gun owners right now. And it might also be the first time that the guy on the other side can't pass a background check because he has felonies.
Walz boasted of Harris's record as vice president and of the support the campaign has received from a diverse array of supporters.
Hundreds of Republicans out with Kamala campaigning. Who would have ever thought we would see Bernie Sanders, Dick Cheney, and Taylor Swift on the same ticket? I'll say it again.
Walz was not alone at the rally. He was joined by what the entertainment industry calls a special guest star. The political term is surrogate.
And I don't know about all of you. I'm still a little bit giddy here. I'm standing on the stage with the 42nd president of the United States.
The 42nd president was, of course, President Bill Clinton.
I don't have any more elections I'll be involved with, and I'm too old to gild the lily. Heck, I'm only 2 months younger than Donald Trump.
Clinton said he's not running for anything anymore except for his grandchildren's future. He warned about a President Trump with new powers to go after his political enemies.
I mean, basically, he's asserted the right to go after anybody that he thinks, in his wisdom, is a threat, right? You sign the oath says you promise to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And he said, I think I'll start with domestic. Bring me the army.
As for Kamala Harris herself, she had three scheduled rallies in Wisconsin, including a rally in La Crosse. She was briefly heckled, but she had a response.
Oh, you guys are at the wrong rally. No, I think you meant to go to the smaller one down the street.
All of the candidates and their surrogates urged people to vote and to get others to vote also. In North Carolina, Bill Clinton told voters they have a chance to do a lot of good for a lot of people.
Your country needs you. Your families need you. Future generations need you. So, starting today, all those people to one-stop early vote and take advantage of the chance to vote early. And then spend the rest of the time all the way to election day taking other people to the polls.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Dennis Marr. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz and Christopher Martinez. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.